The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
A ridiculous round of football full of upsets and thrilling results. But what does it all mean in the run home? We're five rounds to go in the AFL season, and we've got all the big talking points and all the big fixtures covered here on the Fox Footy podcast, all thanks to the Fox Footy app, which you can download from the App Store and from Google Play as well for all the latest and best news, highlights, scores and stats. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth. Max Lawton is back in the studio, as is the host of The Lowdown, Sarah Ollie. Hello, team.
Hello, Benny. Ben.
Are we all good?
Good. I don't know if that's the word to describe me after the weekend.
As a Sydney fan?
That's okay, yeah.
Well, to be fair, as we saw, or heard rather, given this is a podcast format last week, your lock of the week guaranteed winner was Gold Coast, and you were correct.
Yes, Master v Apprentice. The Apprentice are winning this year, if we look at the form. If we look at the form so far, yep. So... I mean, I was being a bit facetious when I said that, Maxie, but...
As was I, of course.
Yes, but turns out, upset of the decade.
Oh, well, certainly that's what Jonathan Brown was saying afterwards. We'll talk about that game a little bit later on, yes. Because we do have a very special guest. Ted Richards is going to join us as well. He's always a very funny man. But, Maxie, as you do every week, you have a look at the run home on foxfooty.com.au. It was a ridiculous weekend with lots of close results and upsets. But remarkably, despite all those results, the top five on the ladder, the proper ladder,
yes,
but the power rankings really is the proper ladder.
Everyone knows that.
Didn't change at all. And there was movement between positions 6 and 9. And remarkably, Geelong went down.
Yeah, so Geelong wins an incredible game, moves down and falls out of the 8. Sydney loses to Gold Coast, stays in the top 4.
Yeah.
So it's all doom and gloom for the Swans and Port, but they're still 4th and 5th.
But what does it all mean? Now, it feels like when you look at the ladder, there might be... There's Richmond, and then there might be two groups after that. There's the top four group, and then there seems like a big peloton, a big chasing pack
yes.
after that.
Very Tour de France.
Yes.
Very good.
Go Cadell.
Who's at the tête de la course? it would be Richmond, Collingwood, West Coast probably. Sort of elevated themselves. West Coast, by the way, seems pretty locked into a home qualifying final.
So
right
top
now.
Two?
I think so. They're yep. a game clear of the Pies and Percentage. And two games clear of the Swans and Port, who now we can't really trust. So you'd have to think the Eagles are going to get that top two finish. Could even yep. finish first, although it's much of a muchness, given you get the home qualifying final. The questions are around the Swans and Port. Port, I've been worried about for a little while. You know, they've been not having impressive wins, and now dropping that game to Fremantle in the West suddenly looks really bad for them. I actually have them missing the 8 at this point.
Port missing the 8?
So
currently 5th.
They're currently 5th, and they were 11-4. And they could miss the 8 because...
That's incredible.
The thing is, you need to get to 13 wins, right? We've been saying it for a while now. And every team in the top 9, Geelong up, has a relatively simple path to 13 wins. Maybe Melbourne is the toughest, but we'll talk about them in a second. With Port Adelaide, their percentage is so bad that if they do drop that one game, they would be 9th right now.
So, this year in particular, percentage has never been more important for these teams, now 4-9.
Yeah, unless we... If Melbourne drops out and loses games to contenders, that's the real variable here. Every other team should get to 13 wins, and it's going to be all about percentage.
Yeah.
Melbourne's percentage is fine, by the way.
Yeah.
They're 125. They're like second best percentage in the comp, whereas Port at 113, Sydney at 114.
Woo-hoo!
Either of those... No, that's not a reason.
But
that's...
you see, Maxie, I've got the Swans. I mean, I'm a pessimist, but I've got them finishing 9th.
Which can easily, very easily happen.
Yes, because they've got that tough run home.
Hardest run home in the competition.
Yes. Essendon and Etihad this Friday night is reasonably tough. Essendon playing for its season. And
Essendon are favourites for that game.
They challenged Collingwood a couple of weeks ago at the G, so you'd say they have to be in that to win that. Collingwood at the SCG is really tough because Collingwood's playing well and because it's at the SCG where Sydney is suddenly terrible.
Move it to the MCG, I say.
Sell your home games with Gold Coast style. It'd be great. Melbourne at the MCG. Sydney has done very well interstate this season, but I still feel like Melbourne can win that game if they play at their best.
Yep.
GWS at Spotless, a very tough game. Yeah. GWS maybe the form team in the comp.
Mm.
And then Hawthorn at the SCG. That's a game they lost last year, I believe it was. Was that the roughy goal after the siren? Or
close to the siren, yes.
Something, too soon, once again.
Something like that. So Sydney could very realistically lose yep. 3 of those, you'd say.
And they've also got a stack of injuries at the moment, which doesn't help.
At the worst possible time yeah. for it. If you get to 13 with a bad percentage, you can miss out if other teams don't make mistakes. The key is they're on 11 right now.
Just trying to still get my head around the fact that Port Adelaide could miss the entire top 8 when we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, them being top 4/even premiership contenders. But that's what a couple of losses does to you. So they were the biggest loser out of the weekend with that loss to GWS?
I would say so. You know, that was a tough game for them. That was a game where a lot of people tipped GWS anyway, but it's a combination of so many things. It's so many unimpressive wins where they're not building that percentage, which we saw Hawthorn do against Carlton, for example. Hawthorn had a percentage issue. Now they're at 119. Now they're above Port and the Swans if they do get to that equal mark. And unless they have a blowout, that might not change. Port's got the Bulldogs at Mars, of course, this weekend. Yes. They should win that.
Yes.
But then the showdown. Then they host the Eagles. Then they travel to the G to face Collingwood. And then Essendon at home in the last week.
It's a tough run, isn't
it? You can lose three or four of those, and that could cost you your season.
I think Mars is even a bit tricky.
Yes, they lost their last year,
I
believe.
No, I think they won last year, but they... Just won. But it's just a funny place where something...
Who knows?
Something
you were there last
happened.
Year, weren't you?
I was. Beautiful. It was freezing, yes.
It was very, very cold.
Freezing but fun.
In the middle of July as well, this Sunday for Port Adelaide. Now, and they, the guys on the couch last night, Sarah, didn't miss Port Adelaide. Paul Roos said that Port is close to the biggest underachieving team of the last five seasons, while Gary Lyon took aim at them for complaining too much. The guys didn't miss last night.
Bruce, he was not holding back, was he? He was going whack, whack, whack. But I guess they're looking at that prelim final they made
2014.
5 years ago now, or 4 years ago, and what they've done since then, and the players they've added to that team. And that's the thing with Port. They tease and tease and tease. And when you look at that list and you look at that forward line, how are they not kicking winning scores?
Yes, and that's what the guys mentioned last night. They've gone from 98 points per game last year, which was second in the competition. This year they're 82 points per game, which is ranked 13th in the competition, which is not the sign of a premiership contender if you're 13th for scoring.
It does feel like they're keying in on that defensive side of things, perhaps as a response to the final last year. You know, who knows what it would be? Because they did so well last year. They had so many scoring shots in that elimination final against West Coast.
They did too.
And then declined. You remember the story with Port at the start of 2017. Everyone's argument was, oh, they're just underachievers. They'll fail again. Because they'd finished 9th or 10th in two straight seasons. Yep. Been around the mark. Looked like they could have jumped up, but just didn't. They had a really good percentage last year. Lose the final. Now it's almost the contrast where they've got a much higher win-loss record than their percentage, and I think that reflects that they actually are a worse team this year.
Right, despite the ladder position, despite the ratio.
Absolutely, because that's your season-long performance, your percentage. That doesn't lie.
What about the Giants, Sarah, on Sunday night it was? They've suddenly gone from potentially missing the finals into top four contention. And the draw, we might have talked about this last week or certainly in the office, the draw has a funny way of either being a hindrance or being a big advantage. And it feels like this year, the draw that GWS had, the shock draw they had against St Kilda, might work to their advantage at the moment.
The Ferrari is purring, isn't it? It's purring beautiful. Beautifully.
With the tongue roll. The Ferrari's Spanish, of course.
No, but they're looking great, and I wouldn't want to be meeting them in the next month or so.
Or in the finals.
No, because they are going along nicely. And this is without Jeremy Cameron. And they've added some players who were selected. I think they showed them on the couch last night. You know, not these high draft picks at all.
Yep.
But some players that have come in to play roles, like a Zach Langdon, who now is having this ferocious pressure in the forward line. They've just added a few little bits and pieces there. And Dawson Simpson.
Yes.
Hasn't he stood up when they've really required someone to stand up? I think the most hit-outs to advantage in the past 4 or 5 weeks.
Just behind Max Gawn, I think, in hit-outs to advantage. It's remarkable considering, as Geelong supporters, Max, watching Dawson run around mostly in the VFL for a lot of weeks, and now he's one of the most influential ruckmen in the competition in the past month.
What a week for ex-Geelong rucks. Nathan Vardy as well, featuring for West Coast.
He's a specimen, isn't he?
And then you could even argue, I mean, we need to put something out there because I have been very negative about Reece Stanley all season.
Now.
Fantastic game.
He was excellent.
And realistic, if you look at the numbers, this surprised me. He's had a pretty good six weeks or so.
Yeah.
He's very much been improving, and he's sort of cemented himself in this side as the number one ruckman. You don't need to do that Sean Darcy trade that was floated with Tim Kelly, anything like that at this point. If he can continue this momentum, this consistency, which has always been his issue.
Well, that's a beautiful segue into the game on Saturday night where it was just a thrilling finish. We thought we saw the game of the season 6 days prior between Sydney and North Melbourne, but I reckon the Geelong-Melbourne probably superseded it just for that amazing second half where Melbourne kicked 6 goals themselves in the third quarter and then Geelong kicked 8 in that last quarter. Tom Hawkins playing statistically the best game of his career, according to the AFL player ratings.
Yeah, he's having a heck of a season, isn't he?
He really is.
He is really imposing himself on the competition. I think for a while there, he was sort of in that position where the wider AFL community, if you ask a regular fan, they'd say Tom Hawkins is overrated.
Hey, and that's what Chris Scott even referred to on Monday night on 360. He says there's this feeling or consensus out there, even among Geelong supporters, that he annoys them somehow, he's overrated.
There's a lack of promise. There's promise unfulfilled there. I was talking to a 10-year-old a few weeks ago, and they said Tom Hawkins was overrated.
Oh, well, they must know.
Exactly. So that's a sign of that sort of issue. But he's playing so well, and that finish was crazy.
It was.
It's crazy that a second straight Geelong-Melbourne game finishes in that dramatic circumstances. What did you take out of it from a Melbourne perspective, Benny? Do you still like Melbourne? Do you still trust Melbourne?
Funny.
Are you in the camp where you've lost faith?
They're still yet to beat a team in the top eight.
Yeah. Yes, this is true.
So it's been fascinating hearing the commentary to the fallout to this, because pundits are split on the D's. Some say they're mentally weak. Kane Corns was pretty strong on that on the weekend. And then others, I remember Jared Waitley talking about this yesterday on Monday, they say that this is an awesome learning experience, and it's so similar to what Richmond experienced 12 months ago. I'm still a little bit in the camp, though, that they haven't beaten that credentialed or well-credentialed side yet, mm-hmm. and that they're starting to run out of time, and that loss could cost them that top four spot, which they'd sort of had their mitts on for quite some time. Statistically, though, they're doing all the right things. Yeah. They're number one in the competition for time in forward half. Those four losses now that they've had by 10 points or less, they've been at least plus 12 in inside 50s in all the games. So from a modern-day game perspective, from Simon Goodwin tactically, they're doing all the right things. They're just falling down in those close moments, which I think is the sign of an inexperienced side.
Yep.
And I also maybe do question how they're, I'm ridiculous for me to question this, being certainly not a player that last played for the East Doncaster Secondary College, but it's what they're training tactically in those close moments, I'd like to know, and how much emphasis they're putting on it. But still, numerically, they're all heading in the right direction, and we do have to remember this is still quite a young side performing well.
Because with Richmond and with those close losses that they had last year, it was in the front half to the middle section of the season.
Yes.
They were able to rectify it by the end.
Yeah.
When they went into finals, they'd had games, they'd banked that experience where they knew that they could overcome and win those close and tight games. It has to be a bit of a mental thing with Melbourne. I know every time they front up to the media, they go, we're learning from it.
Yeah.
But until they actually put those learnings into a game day experience and they win one of those tight ones, it's going to be that niggling thought at the back of their heads.
I think we want to ascribe a reason for everything. We watch that game and we want to say, well, this is why they lost.
Yep.
The answer primarily for me is luck.
Luck.
Max Gawn being off with the blood rule.
Yeah.
It's actually taking that mark and then kicking the goal. There are so many...
In good hands as well. You'd love it in Zach Tui's hands.
One of the best pair of hands to have it in the Geelong side, absolutely.
Yep.
Even that's and he's probably an 80% chance to hit that goal.
Yep.
So that's a 20% chance right there Melbourne had to win. Max Gawn's on the ground. You'd say that raises their chance by another 5-10%. So many parts of that passage of play. These are just individual elements of luck that all amount to something that adds up to Melbourne losing. And you have to take that into account in any game. The problem really with Melbourne is that they gave up the 5-goal lead.
Yes.
You can critique them for that.
And that has been an issue, that they have failed to arrest goals when they come on like that.
It's happened about 6 times this year where they've given up big stretches of big leads. And that's happened prominently in those 4 close losses, as well as a couple of games they've been unconvincing in, like the Kangaroos. I think it was in round 2. They had a stretch there where they gave up a lot of goals. From a Geelong pessimistic supporter's perspective,
yes.
So according to the official player ratings, 10 of the 13 bottom players in that game were Geelong players. Like Melbourne overall were the more complete team across the night. It just took, I think, a special effort from Hawkins, and I think Dangerfield's best game of the season.
Probably,
he was
yeah.
incredible. His kicking was insane throughout the night, and a couple of, and I think Stanley really rose up to the challenge as well. But besides that bottom echelon there of Geelong players, I think there's still some question marks around.
And that's been the question mark for them for a couple of years now, really. They're in that same position where they're going to be thereabouts. They can win these games because they have so many superstars who can lift.
And yeah.
If you don't have that in finals, as I think Paul Ruse mentioned it again on the couch on Monday night, it's the bottom six that decides a grand final. It's the bottom six that decides finals.
Mm.
That's where Geelong could be caught out once again once we get to September. But we'll see.
We will see. Well, we're going to now talk about your Sydney Swans, Sarah. And what a disappointing weekend it was for the Sydney Swans. And a man who has been keeping a close eye on the Sydney Swans for quite some time is, of course, a former premiership player himself, a business analyst, and most importantly, the host of the Richards Report podcast. Great to have Ted Richards on the Fox Footy podcast today. Hello, Ted.
Thanks for having me.
Ted, I think, were you as shocked as anyone by that Sydney Swans loss to the Gold Coast on the weekend? We understand you were live at the game there at the SCG.
Yeah, I live in Melbourne now, but I flew up for the game, and the first quarter panned out as expected. Then when the second quarter began, I just assumed, like so many people, that that little bit of momentum that Gold Coast had would very quickly stop and the game would go back as expected. But credit to Gold Coast, unfortunately for the Swans, real inability to stop that that flood of goals for the rest of the game.
What did you notice at the ground in particular during that second and third quarter? I think it's the first time that the Swans have ever been held goalless in two consecutive quarters at the SCG.
Yeah, for so many reasons, it was doing the little things poorly, and I don't have stats in front of me. And I look at the game so much from a defensive point of view, it's just broken tackles, not being able to make the spoil when there's the opportunity. And it's hard to kind of quantify a lot of these things because it's no actual one where you can say that's the reason why we lost the game. But when you compound them up over two quarters, you go, well, there were so many opportunities for us to stop the momentum they had and for us to really start to put some scoreboard pressure back on, and never at any stage did really take those opportunities.
Ted, on the couch last night, Jonathan Brown said that the game exposed the Swans' biggest problem, and that's an over-reliance on Buddy Franklin. Do you subscribe to that theory? And further to that, how big has the injury to Sam Reid been without Buddy having that second tall there all season?
I guess you can be a victim of any individual that plays well. When they don't play well, that people can say that there's an over-reliance. And so it is quite an easy point to make, and credit to Buddy when you're All-Australian year after year. If you don't play well, it makes it hard for the team to fill that gap. But when you compound that again with other stars in the team that aren't playing well, that have been of the calibre of All-Australian, be it Hanbury or others, so Kieran Jack, who's an All-Australian player as well, that wasn't playing, it starts to then, you really then rely on that second tier of players to fill that gap. And not every team's got depth that can fill that void.
And is that something you think the Swans are missing, that depth there? And in terms of leadership especially, is there a depth of leaders there once you take out the players like a Jack and a Hanbury and a McVay that they weren't there on the weekend?
I wouldn't say there's a depth of leaders, but what happened on the weekend is a bit different from what happened, say, when the Swans lose to Richmond. And I don't think people should just say, because two losses, they're two of the same things. When we lost to Richmond, it was for many reasons. And most notably, Richmond are a fantastic team. And no disrespect for Gold Coast. But I think everyone's going to have their off day every now and then. But a good team can still find a way to win a game. And I think that's all was missing for the Swans on the weekend. But they just still couldn't find a way, even though some people were having an off game.
Ted, are you surprised by how the Swans are playing at the SCG this season, being 4-5? They've lost to quite a few good teams there as well, but that's sort of not what we expect from this team to play disappointingly at home.
Yeah, I think as much as I'd love to say, it's a bit of an anomaly, but I think you can say that once, twice, possibly three times, but when it's now getting to 4 or 5 times... Unfortunately, if this continues, the SCG possibly won't be the intimidating fortress that it has been for so long, in that it has traditionally been a hard place to play, to beat the Swans. And there's a saying that I like, the air goes out of the balloon quicker than how it goes in. And you can very quickly lose that aura of having an intimidating fortress. So And possibly that's what we're seeing if this thing continues.
Have you seen anything that you could put that down to, why they would be playing worse there? Are they playing a different style that's not suiting the ground dimensions or anything like that?
No. I think people, in my own opinion, oversell the difference in the dimensions of the ground. It is minor. I think if I was to point the finger at one thing, it's mindset. And that sometimes over the course of my career, I saw players, and I think I was guilty of myself. You get yourself up for the real big challenges in football, and whether people are aware of it or not, sometimes they don't have the same focus when the challenge isn't as big in front of them. And possibly that is, I'm not sure if that's one of the reasons, but having that mindset and that resilience and that relentless approach week after week, it doesn't waver, is a difference between a good side and a mediocre side.
I'm not sure how early you got to the SCG on Saturday, Ted, but when you walked in, and if you did sort of catch a glimpse of the curtain raiser, were you a little surprised that your great mate down back, Heath Grundy, was running around in the kneeful?
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't surprised, and I'm aware I'm biased here in that not only is he a former teammate, but he still is a great mate. And I think from what little I know about key backs and key defenders, in that there's not a great ability to have options on the bench that you can, and flexibility. So what Reg has done over the years is just play consistently and play at a role. So I couldn't believe it when he was out, but I'm not the one making the decisions.
I know he's a great mate, but do you think that do you think he'll play on in 2019 and still has a valuable role in that Sydney Swans defence?
Oh, I can. And I think the football world, and I'm not just speaking about Reg's example here, I'm speaking about a lot of things that people have a real bias towards things that just happened recently. I think, recency bias. And with Reg, I think if you look back at how Reg was playing a month ago and some of the opponents that he was beating and what people were saying about him as a one-on-one key defender, it... you don't lose that over a couple of weeks.
Yep.
And what I kind of, I guess, what I want to bring back to what I was saying before is no one's got a big bank of key defenders that are ready to go out. They're hard to find, and I think Reg can play a real role for the Swans in just providing that stability down back.
You say those key defenders are hard to find. Who do you think are the best this year? Who are your all-Australian key defenders this season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think they're not the same thing. Some of the best and the all-Australian, there can be a difference in that. I haven't studied them enough to definitively say these are my all-Australian key defenders. But I think Rance, McGovern, and these guys that have done another fantastic year. Obviously two of the best key defenders. I've always had my question mark on some of the all Australian defenders. Not always selected, but that are being thrown up, in that ensuring that they're put in discussions for the right reason, and that is that they're first and foremost a hard opponent to kick a goal on, and not for the amount of possessions that they're getting.
So you think that's sort of just a symptom of the way people who don't know defence as well as you would, the way we watch the game, we don't see those acts that really make a great key defender?
Oh, well, I think a defence needs a balance of attack and defence, and that's why Rance is such a good defender, and that he's so hard to score a goal against, and that he can... he's great with counter-attacks, and similarly, with when you look back in history at players like Scarlett too. But there is a role for a small defender, be it a Nick Smith or someone else, that does a shutdown role on one of the best small forwards in the competition, may finish the game with 8 or 10 disposals, but has arguably played the most important role for their team that weekend in shutting down someone that could quite easily kick 4, 5, or 6 goals. And I don't think when people discuss defenders at all, Australian level, it's always comparing apples with apples.
All right, well, let's move on from the doom and gloom there, Ted, and discuss something fun at the Swans. And Ben Ronk, he's wearing the number 25, a very famous number, and he's having a remarkable season, and he's in the running for the Rising Star Award. I mean, what have you liked from him this year, and do you give him a shot to win?
Sarah, I'm just, it's so funny in that I'm so proud of what he's achieving and how he's playing and how he's conducting himself. But I barely know him. We never, there was no overlap. So I've got no right to kind of feel proud and excited for him. I really like how he plays the game, and I look at him as someone that I really would have enjoyed playing alongside, in that he provides energy, and I think some opposition fans probably hate him. Yeah, and I think that's what a great small forward does.
Hawthorn fans, maybe.
But,
yep.
Yeah, but also his story off the rookie list.
Another Swan off the rookie list.
Yeah, another Swan off the rookie list. And I think the fact that, you know, his game on the MCG on Friday night against Hawthorn in his third game, where he kicked 7 goals, he's proved it wasn't a one-off. It wasn't a flash in the pan. To go back, like when he kicks his goals, my phone runs hot with abuse from friends. From people that go, finally, I'm seeing number 25 kick some goals. But I'm loving watching him, and I'm hopeful that he's got a huge career in front of him.
Do you reckon the aura, he's playing with the aura because of the number 25, that sort of inspired him a little bit more this year, Ted?
As much as I'd love to say yes, there is no way I've got anything to do with this. The number 25 at the Swans, I was incredibly proud to receive that because a bit of history there, both from the club point of view with Barry Round, who wore number 25 at the Swans. But personally for me, I chose number 25 when I got to the club because the player to wore it before me was Andrew Schorble. And Andrew Schorble came from Collingwood to the Swans, a key defender, and won a best and fairest in his first year at the Swans. And I just looked at him and thought, well, I'd love to replicate what you did. So, sometimes numbers just mean a bit more with their backstory than just what they represent.
Well, you kicked 34 goals during your 261-game career. He's already got 21 in his 12-game career, so he's on your heels, Ted. Just before we let you go, we need to get a tip. It's ironic this week that the Swans are playing Essendon for the Ted Richards Cup this weekend, so we need to try and get a tip from your good self. Can the Swans bounce back?
Yeah, I am biased. I've still got a soft spot for Essendon. I grew up as an Essendon fan, but I think I really wouldn't want to be playing the Swans right now with the discussions that I know that have been going on yesterday with the review and how hard they would be on each other.
Yep.
So I would not be surprised to see the Swans come out and be the exact opposite to what we saw last weekend. And unfortunately for Essendon, I think it's going to be hard to fight against that. And but I still think it's going to be a good game because Essendon equally have got a lot to play for too.
Well, this isn't the only podcast that you feature on. Ted, tell us a little bit about the Mighty Richards Report.
Yeah. So I started the Richards Report about a year ago, and it's not a football podcast. So I speak about investing, which is a bit of a passion of mine, and far from me to say to people what they should be doing with their money. I'm speaking with people that are famous investors, fund managers, and I'm asking them just the basic questions and hopefully helping people get a bit of an understanding about their money. So check it out. It's called The Richards Report.
And you've had a little bit to do with Joe Watson and Chris Judd over this year as well. They've featured on your media platforms.
Yeah. So I spoke to Chris, who does a lot of investing himself. He's a, he's really interesting, really passionate about it. Chris is very open with where he's been investing recently, and equally with Job too. And Job's got a really interesting story in that some of the investments that he's made overseas in New York off the back of his year over there and the opportunities that he saw.
Well, Ted, we're looking forward to seeing you on Friday night. Hand over the Richards Cup to whoever wins between Essendon and the Sydney Swans. Always a time-honoured cup. We really appreciate your time on the Fox Footy podcast and enjoy the rest of the day.
No worries. See ya.
Thank you very much to Ted Richards for joining us. Always an entertaining chat. It's now speaking of entertaining, it's now time for Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
I think I need to listen to the Richards Report because I know nothing about money.
Yes.
I hear Tom Brown's chatting Bitcoin on it, so it's going to be very good.
Then I'm definitely tuning in. All right, let's start Fair or Farce.
Yes.
Ben, we'll start with you.
Yes. No music. Let's just get into it. Yeah. We want the segment.
Okay.
Yes.
Hawthorn should shoot Bambi and retire Jared Ruffett at the end of the season.
Sarah! Gee, he's not playing as well as what he used to. No, I think it's a farce. I think he's still got a role in Hawthorn in the short term. Not as good as what he once was, but I still think he's got a valuable role at the Hawks.
Do you think Tom Lynch has any impact on that?
It will, yes. I don't think Tom Lynch will go to Hawthorn, though. I think he's heading to Richmond, most likely, or Collingwood.
Given that Bucks was very open.
Yes, we'll talk about that in a tick.
Ooh.
Maximilian.
Hi.
Only one of Heath Grundy and Jared McVeigh can play on in 2019.
Sydney does so well bringing in all these young players. I don't want to retire one of them, so I'll say farce. But I think it's entirely fair that they need to look at continuing to revitalise because they've got quite a few young defenders in the NEAFL always pushing for spots. We're finally seeing Alir cement that spot that we thought was his.
Hallelujah.
At the start of last year. So they've got so many options there and some injured players as well who could very easily slot in. So it would make sense if one of them was to leave, but I wouldn't be pushing them out, certainly.
What do you think, Sarah? Especially after hearing Ted say that he thinks Grundy's got a valuable role at the Swans next year.
No, I think they can both play. They're different types of defenders. I don't know if they both will. I mean, the one thing I'll say about Grundy, though, is that synergy he has with Rampy is one of the best in the league. Mm. So I'd be careful on retiring him too early. McVeigh, we might see in the coach's box. Don't know. I'd love him to be on the field, but I'm going off on a tangent. Ben!
Yes.
Tom Hawkins could take the Cats to a flag this year.
No, that's a farce. It will need more of a team effort. I think it is certainly this season's flag, and as we've seen in recent years, this will be a structure/method flag run. And I think the Cats have the structure and the method. Just those inconsistencies certainly do hinder them. But Tom Hawkins alone will not take them to the flag.
Okay, Maxie, one for you. Mm. The only head harder than Zach Tui's is the pigeon at the MCG.
Is this a science fair or farce? I think scientifically that would be a farce, I suppose.
But colloquially,
what a great situation when we've got a fantastic GIF emerging from that fantastic video, I'm sure, on foxfooty.com.au.
And some great sports photography on show during that time. There was two or three photographers that were on the ball, literally.
On the pigeon?
Yes, on the pigeon.
It was very exciting
Michael times. Klein and I think Michael Wilson from Getty AFL Media did a great job.
Reminded me of the time MLB pitcher Randy Johnson hit a bird and it exploded.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Feathers everywhere. Yeah.
They pitch very fast.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on from that, the death of a bird. Ben.
Oh, no. Yes.
Nathan Buckley's candour with Tom Lynch's meeting shows that Collingwood are actually out of the race for the star.
Oh,
I like that.
I like that. I would say there's a lot of fair about that. There is talk that Richmond is in contention here. And I think it might have been a bit of a play. No doubt Buckley would have gone into that Footy Classified interview last night knowing that he was going to be asked straight up about that and was prepared to give an honest answer. I like your theory there, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
You're the underdog. You try and make your play really publicly. Get maybe some, what people want is people on Twitter tweeting at Tom Lynch saying go to Collingwood because that'll make him go.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a great fair or farce from you, Sarah.
It's only going to get better from here, Ben. Don't you worry. All right, Maxie. Josh Walker's newfound form is more impressive than his newfound hair.
Well, he paid for one of them. And he would get paid for the form, I guess. So, yes, it's fair.
How about that mark?
Took it. I know, that's what I'm saying.
Awesome, wasn't it?
That was really weird with Josh Walker is that he started, I feel like they threw him back in defence at the end of last year, and he was impressive. And then he just sort of disappeared again, and now he's rediscovering himself a little bit once again.
Yeah, very important with Harris Andrews being out the past couple of weeks. He's been good in that defence, and now he's he'll be playing for his own cup this weekend when Geelong takes on Brisbane. Yes.
Preview of the Cups. Mm.
Maxie, another one for you. Oh. Crowd segregation is a horrible idea.
Fair. It's not necessary. The fighting issue, which is where this all comes from, right? This is not reflective of the AFL specifically, and we like to think that we're different to all other sports, but other sports have this too. This is a societal thing. People just find that sort of behaviour acceptable now. People drink and think it's acceptable to be aggressive.
Sarah, I want to sort of throw something at you. Maxie and I aren't huge drinkers or don't drink at all.
What are you saying, Ben?
So, no, well, you so enjoy...
We're better people.
I'm saying you enjoy
a Pinot
wine.
On a Friday or a Thursday or a Wednesday.
But I'm trying to get my head around, is alcohol an issue here, or is that just an excuse? Is that people aren't being responsible about their own behaviour at the football? Because from what I understand, there's a lot of people who load up, so to speak, before they get to the game. The beer isn't as strong, or the alcohol isn't as strong once you get to the game when they're sold at the ground. So is alcohol really an issue in this space of crowd fighting?
Well, alcohol fuels violence. There's definitely a link there. But I think there's an issue if you're using alcohol as an excuse, because people can go to the footy and have a couple of glasses of wine or a couple of pots of beer and they don't fight.
So you wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago, if I might ask you about this, about an experience that you had at the Richmond-Sydney
game
that was quite confronting.
Yeah, it was. So this was just after the match had finished and I was leaving the ground and I saw a fight break out in front of me and I put my journalist hat on and I started filming it because there's been so much violence, particularly at Etihad lately, that was my first instinct. Anyway, I ran towards it and started filming and one of the guys who was involved in the fight, one of his friends came up to me and knocked my phone and called me a bitch and told me to, you know.
Yep. Go somewhere else.
Go somewhere else. And that was really intimidating for me because I'm a small person and this person was standing right over me and he was drunk. He was pissed. So who knows if he would have felt it within his right to, you know, hit me or something. I don't know. It was really scary and confronting and it just made me think, oh, this isn't isolated. This would be happening elsewhere as well. And do you know what? There was a great ad over the World Cup. It was a picture of an English supporter.
Oh, yes.
And he had the English flag, the cross on his face. And it said, every time England wins, it was something about women getting hit. And every time
I thought there was one with a woman and it was the white and
that's
red cross,
right.
But the cross was blood.
Yeah, the cross was
very
blood.
And how powerful.
It was so powerful, but it was something about every time that there is a sporting match and there's alcohol that people are fueled into violence like that. So there must be some kind of correlation because there was a study done for this poster. Mm. So, yeah, it is an issue. It's a massive issue.
Yeah.
And the other issue is if people are doing this at Etihad Stadium, what are they doing in their homes?
Yeah,
it is.
I don't think it's unfair to say that Australia has a drinking problem. I think that's entirely reasonable. And again, Ben and I are both coming from the perspective of not drinking, so there's that sort of barrier where I go, well, I don't get it. I don't get why you need to drink before an event to make it more fun. I don't need to drink to have fun, that old cliche sort of thing. it's just bizarre to me the way people view alcohol and consume it and feel like they need to have it, when it does enable this sort of behaviour, and it's so disappointing and frustrating to see.
So that's about knowing as well within you what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
So some people can drink and they're fine. Some people can drink and not be fine.
And some people, I think, want to use it as an excuse.
Totally.
To let loose.
And the good thing is that stadium management, AFL, we saw Travis Old yesterday come out. We've seen clubs, you know, representatives from clubs get right behind stamping this out.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that brawl over the weekend, I think, will be a line in the sand, and I think we'll see some big crackdowns over the coming days. Have you got one last one?
I do have, and it's a bit silly after that serious chat.
Right, but
let's finish on a lighter note, shall we, Ben?
Mm.
Jordan Lewis should be a forced omission every time he plays against Geelong.
Now, I would say it's a farce, but Maxie, what's the stat here that he's been involved in a lot of post-siren losses against
Geelong?
Five
post-siren losses against Geelong. Technically, one of those was, I don't even know the match, Jaden Hunt had a shot after goal from a completely unrealistic length. It might, was it maybe the Melbourne Geelong game earlier this season? Did he have a, like a torp to potentially win the game or something?
No, I don't think because of the Maxi Gorn kick just before the signs. That one didn't count.
No, because it wasn't post siren. Yes. But four other occasions, mostly obviously being with Hawthorn against Geelong. It's an interesting little quirk of the things. I suppose he'd probably take the premierships over losing those few games to Geelong, though.
Interesting, fair or fast. Good work from you, Sarah. Nice mix there. Let's move on to just previewing a couple of games over the weekend. And we have to pump this one up. Richmond v Collingwood, top of the table clash at the MCG. And it is exclusive on TV to Fox Footy. So there'll be a special extended pregame show live and exclusive from the MCG at 1 p.m.
Wow.
On Channel 504. It's the only place on TV to watch the game. Sarah Jones, Hutto, Brad Johnson, Gary Lyon, Nick Riewoldt, Nick Dalcenno, and David King will take you through what is the most highly anticipated clash between these two sides, I think, for quite some time. Probably since they met earlier in the season, actually.
Yes, that was a pretty hyped game as well. And as Jared Healy would say, it's live and free of ads.
Yes, that's right.
Very exciting.
Yes.
It's a great game. I looked back at the Collingwood-Richmond game from earlier in this season, and in my mind, I was like, oh, Richmond won that by like 40 points. That was easy.
But I remember that Collingwood got just as much positive publicity out of that game than what Richmond did.
Yes, I feel like that was my match report that I wrote.
Yes.
Is that how it actually made me feel better about them? They were 11 points down at three-quarter time.
Mm.
So this was a classic Richmond run out the fourth quarter, win the game.
Foot on the pedal type performance.
Yeah. Exactly. It was just classic what we've seen from them this season. So Collingwood's probably better than where they were in round 5 or 6 when they had that game, I would say. So they should get closer. I've been saying all season, there's one game that Richmond will lose at the MCG.
Do you think this is the game?
I would not be brave enough to
say
tip it.
Say it,
but
say
when
it.
But when else is it going to be? Because I don't think it could be.
Well, maybe it's not going to be.
Well, exactly. It could be to Geelong next week because Geelong got even closer than Collingwood did earlier this season when they played. And Geelong has been better at the MCG this year. It's either that or it's finals because I don't think it's to like the Dogs in round 23 or anything like that. This is probably as good as a chance as it's going to be.
Could this be a grand final preview?
Well, that's what a lot of people have been saying. And if that does come to fruition, it'll be the first grand final between Richmond and Collingwood since 1980, which was previously Richmond's last premiership. How many do you think we're going to get to the game? Matty Barmer for foxfooty.com.au yesterday reported that there'll be in excess of 85,000. The biggest home and away crowd between Richmond and Collingwood was back in 1977 when they got 92,436. Can we pip that on Saturday, Sarah?
I don't think so. I think if it was a Friday night or even a Saturday night, maybe. But I think the time slot may be working against us ever so slightly.
The local footy time slot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it is the traditional one, at least.
It is.
Which I like. I think probably a few people would not be thrilled that it is only on Fox. I think that's understandable for some point of views.
But there's a way to get around that.
There is, and pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course. It's going to be fantastic coverage. But I think it's great that it is on that time slot because it's going to feel like not quite like a grand final, but closer to it because it is in the day.
Indeed.
I really enjoy that.
At the totally opposite end of the spectrum, we've got Gold Coast taking on Carlton on
Saturday
night.
Gold Coast are a good team, Ben.
Yes, they are, Sarah. Yes,
are they, Sydney?
I'm sure your view is slightly skewed in that direction after the weekend's activities. Ultimately now, it's Carlton are going to win the wooden spoon, certainly after that win against Gold Coast over the Sydney Swans. So we haven't given a lot of love to the Suns, but credit to them. They made the most of the Swans. Laziness. Yeah. There's a couple
headedness.
Well, that was a word that was thrown around on the couch last night. And there's some great labs during the coverage on the weekend that showed Isaac Heaney just not giving Alex Sexton enough respect and attention at stoppages, which I think sort of epitomised the Swans' mindset. So, do we give the Blues though, despite that another big loss to Hawthorn on the weekend, do we give them a chance against the Gold Coast Suns?
2 weeks ago, I was tipping the Blues. And then the Suns have decided to play all right for a little while. But what I saw was the same thing that we saw in the JLT. Mm. I believe you commentated a game, a Gold Coast Brisbane game.
Yes.
Where they had fantastic pressure.
Pressure.
And then round 1 and 2, that was their thing. I remember Bob Murphy talking about it on AFL 360 before round 3, that he tipped Gold Coast to make the 8. Not looking so great right now, but they were 2-0, and it was because they'd had immense pressure. And they finally brought that again. So is that another team that's unable to play up to the level its coach wants it to? It's that it's too young. But if they can produce that, they should easily beat Carlton.
Yeah, I don't think Carlton have a hope in hell, really. But although, do I know? I don't know. But but we also have to remember the Suns did what they did to the Swans without the top 5 in their best and fairest last year. Mm. So it's a big effort.
Yep.
And I think maybe this will give them a little spur, a little kick to finish the season on a bit of a high, and they might even grab another win here or there.
Both think Suns will win?
Yeah, and I think it's also fair to say that there was probably a little bit of commentary around, and I've been guilty of this too, Gold Coast doesn't need to win another game. They should try and lose as much as they can, get the best draft pick possible. In a vacuum, that's fine. In this specific scenario, you saw how Gold Coast reacted after beating Sydney.
Yeah.
You saw how Stephen May spoke so well after the game about what it meant to him and the club and all those players. There were so many players getting Gatorade on them for their first win at AFL level after, when they were singing the song. That meant so much that is going to mean more than one or two slots in the draft will ever mean for them. Although they could probably still finish 17th, so it might not matter.
It looks like there was just one captain at that club when he was giving that speech.
Whoa. I think that's probably fair.
Yes.
Because there is right now.
So well, we already talked about Tom Lynch and the Nathan Buckley interviewed on Footy Classified. Where do you think he'll be next year, Max, if you had just a stab in the dark?
Knowing nothing, the wind is certainly blowing towards Punt Road, is it not?
Yes.
Hawthorn.
Well, I don't know. Hawthorn might pull one out of the hat.
I think it's those two, and I think it's Collingwood third.
So, mate, I think both coaches of those two sides will have a lot of pull.
Yes.
A lot of pull. Just how Harbick's been able to turn around this club and Clarko's legacy in history. So that'll be fascinating to see where that goes. So we're all tipping the Suns to beat Carlton for the Daniel Gorringe Cup. Let's head to the other tips and cups for round 19. We've already talked to Ted Richards for the Ted Richards Cup. Essendon taking on the Sydney Swans. He's thinking that it could be an ugly night for Essendon. Do you think the same way, Max?
I like the way he's thinking there. This is real bounce back theory sort of areas. Tom Morris.
Rebound effect area.
Oh, no. He's not here, but he's in spirit. Hello, Tom.
Essendon, you know, it was an okay win against Fremantle. Not great. Yeah, I think Sydney, I expect them to lift. And I would have said they're a better team than Essendon before last week, certainly. So Sydney should win.
I'm feeling pumped after that from Ted Richards. I was fist pumping when he was like, there's been some hard words spoken. I was like, yes.
We can attest to that.
Come on.
Didn't see that. Just a final tip as well on Richmond and Collingwood. This is for the David Cloak Cup. Of course, father of Travis, Cameron and Jason.
I am not going to be brave enough to Collingwood because we did also see them lose to West Coast at the MCG week before last. So Richmond should still be the better team.
Tigers, Sarah?
Yes, Tigers for me.
Geelong and Brisbane. We mentioned Josh Walker just before. Ooh. But of course, 2011 Premiership player Trent West played for both of these clubs. So this is for the Trent West Cup at GMHBA Stadium.
Or the Bundy Cup.
Yeah, or the Bundy Cup, yes. There's a couple there. Mitch Clark Cup, of course.
Yeah,
as well.
Some real movement between these two sides.
Yes.
The Miracle on Grass Redux, perhaps. Is that right.
That was the Ash McGrath game. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. So was that like 8-9 goals down or something?
Yeah, something ridiculous.
There've been a few close games. There was that one in round 23 where Brisbane had that kick like stopped on the goal line that would have given them a win over Geelong, like 2013, I want to say.
Down at GMHBA?
Down at the Cattery, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I distinctly remember that one. I've got a story going up today on Tuesday on foxfootball.com.au. Brisbane's one of the best bad teams ever. For being 4-13, they have such a good percentage. They are so impressive. They should not beat Geelong. And Geelong can make finals if it wins its three games that look easy on the fixture at GMHBA.
They haven't really been blown away in a lot of games this year, Brisbane. When they've won, it's normally been pretty convincing, and a lot of their losses have been close.
And that's how you get such a good percentage, I guess. So I do think this game will be within a four-goal margin at most.
Mm.
I do think Geelong wins, and I think they beat Freo and the last one, Gold Coast.
Got a good run.
That should be enough for the Cats to make finals.
Yeah, I agree. Best bad. That's a good little oxymoron from you, Maxie. Yes. Very good.
Cats
for me.
GWS and St Kilda for the Josh Bruce Cup. Bruce. Not sure if he'll be out there on the weekend. Or Jack Steele. This could be for Jack Steele Cup as well.
Yes. Minus the man bun.
Bring
back the man bun, Jack.
No, don't.
I liked it. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Who wins, Sarah?
Are the Giants, yes.
Yeah, they are one of the four teams of the comp.
Could be one of the biggest margins, I think, of the weekend, this one.
Yep.
Adelaide and Melbourne is a huge, huge game.
Yes, yes.
This is massive for the Peter Vardy Cup. Not only is the Peter Vardy Cup up on the line, but so are Melbourne's finals hopes here.
Yeah, and how fitting that Bernie Vince is in the media this week. Leading up to Adelaide v Melbourne. Yeah, so Melbourne has a very tough run home. I'll pull it up in a second, but they're going to need to win three again to make it. They get to 12 wins and someone else drops one, they can make it because of their percentage. But this is the one they have to win. And Adelaide looks like a top eight team that just won't squeak in because of its win-loss record.
Yeah.
So you're telling me if Melbourne win, they still haven't beat a top eight team?
That's how it works. but it's an impressive win nonetheless.
I'm a fence sitter here.
I believe in Melbourne. And I've said this a few times now on the podcast. They either miss finals or they go on to sort of win the flag, contend for the flag, those sort of areas. This is one of those games they have to win to make it, and it's one of those ones where it proves how good they can be. Mm. They should have won the game at the Adelaide Oval against Port earlier this season and did not. I think they win this one.
Okay, you've convinced me. I'll go the Ds too.
Gold Coast as well for them to come. Then Sydney at the MCG, West Coast in Perth, GWS at the MCG. That could very easily be Saturday afternoon, Saturday night blockbuster in round 23.
Yeah.
It can't be on Friday night. We had a look at the fixture. Melbourne plays on Sunday in round 22. But, gee, that'll be a big game.
Huge, huge game. Also a big game, North Melbourne and West Coast. North Melbourne have just been hanging around ninth for quite some time now, but the losses are just starting to build up, and you just think their finals hopes are starting to dwindle, and they'll be playing for the Casey Green Cup on Sunday.
And they're starting to concede big scores. That's the problem with North. They started off as a really stingy team, but it's all kind of just gone to the shit lately. They're sinking down.
100 plus, again from you.
Yes, 100 plus points they've conceded in the past four weeks.
In retrospect, does the Sydney game feel like the last gasp of a fading contender?
Potentially.
I did say that last week. I said the oxygen will be sucked out of them after that loss. I didn't know it would also be sucked out of the Swans.
Keep in mind, that game took so much out of them, I guess. Keep in mind, this is at Blundstone Arena.
Yes.
Good there. And West Coast, I don't know their record there. I can't imagine they have much of a record there.
They have played there before. I remember a game on a Sunday afternoon game there, but I can't remember the results.
So if North was on 10 wins and winning this would get them into the eight potentially, I would be more willing to pick them, but I just think they've lost it. I think they're done.
Do you know what I'm looking forward to seeing?
What?
Shannon Hearn kicking with the wind down there.
Oh, that's really good for you.
Now that he's not getting a suspension for standing on the footy ground.
What a great plug that'll be for Fox Footy's longest kick, which will be on grand final day this year down at the...
Yeah, could be going from goal square to goal square.
The Western Bulldogs and Port Adelaide have the long commute to Mars Stadium this weekend for the Nathan Eagleton Cup.
How do you get there if you're in Adelaide? Do you think there are any direct flights to Ballarat?
I don't think there is to the Rash.
No Qantas Link flights?
Maybe a few buses.
Would you just drive?
Maybe Rex.
Oh, yeah. Regional Express. Everyone's favourite airline.
Yes.
And Port are not flying at the moment.
No, they're not.
But I still think they should beat the Bulldogs.
Yeah, the dogs are done.
Yeah. Completely irrelevant.
The dogs are done, unfortunately.
They'll win like two more games because they play St Kilda and Carlton, though.
Yep.
So...
Port for me too.
It's a real meh kind of end of the season for the Dogs, unfortunately.
From the Fox Footy point of view, happy for this to be the 3:20 game on Channel 7.
Yes. And also that the last game is the time-honoured Zach Dawson Cup for Fremantle and Hawthorn at Optus Stadium, Sarah.
I didn't know that Zach Dawson was at a club that Ross Lyon wasn't.
This is very true. Of course, spent some good time at St Kilda as well.
So Fremantle, who? I just missed the last one. What? Fremantle?
Hawthorn.
I just was fading away with you there, Maxie.
Yeah. This matters more than probably you think. Hawthorn needs to win this to make finals.
Freo are going to get back Fife or Sandy?
That's a good question.
Sandy, maybe. Fife might be still a week or two away, but Sandy's...
Because they are a remarkably different-looking team with those two players in there.
They still have played quite well in the past 2 weeks without them, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they're definitely better with them.
No doubt.
I'm going to stick with the Hawks just because they need to keep winning.
Yeah, it's a tough trip over there, but I was going to say if Brisbane can do it, but then Brisbane beat Hawthorn twice, so... Hawthorn just?
With sort of...
Question mark?
Yes, right, the upward inflection sort of...
Queenslander.
Is interesting. Great work from you again, Sarah, in the Fox Footy podcast bunker. Looking forward to having you back in, I'm sure, a number of times throughout the weekend lowdown back on the Thursday night.
Mm-hmm, yep, we're on Thursday night this week.
Can you promise any expletives or...?
No, I'm gonna be a good girl this week.
Right, good work, Sis. Great work from you, Maxie, as always. And remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.